Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this very special edition of the Babylon Podcast. My name is Kurt, and I am from Scapecast.org and WorldFantasy2008.org. At DragonCon this year, I was able to get into and bring my iRiver and record one of the panels with Claudia Christian. So, without any further ado, I know everyone would rather hear Claudia than me. So, ladies and Vorlons, I now present Claudia Christian, live from DragonCon.
First of all, I have the need to know, who has no more clean clothes. Anybody here?
Sure.
No more clean clothes. All right, then you have to ask me a special question, and I'll give you a T-shirt. Clean, nice, white T-shirt. Ooh. With ClaudiaChristian.net on the front of it. Hey! It's free advertising! What do you want? Neil Diamond on the cover? You know, come on, what am I going to do? Give you, oh, yeah, I'm going to let you walk around with a Buffy T-shirt on. How about that? Yeah. Easy there now, James Marsters fans over there. It's always the chicks. My favorite color is?
Yes.
Cerulean blue. Is that a blue?
Yeah.
That, like one of those indigo, Van Gogh, depressing, cutting ear off stage blues. Suicidal blue. That's my favorite color. I like that deep purpley Moroccan kind of blue thing. I can't even stand out near you guys. This is really awkward. This is weird. Hi! Okay. So, no, I'm not giving away my purse. No money, just T-shirts. Okay, first question. Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. It's been great. Oh, there's one brave soul down there, yes.
When's Star High coming out?
Star Hike is supposed to come out on DVD by the end of the year. However, we have a station, a channel in England interested in actually showing the 6 episodes. So they're rushing to finish them, and hopefully it'll air and come out on DVD. Plus, we have a game as well. I'm going to go over there and record the voice for the game probably by the end of the year.
Yes, they're all men, except for you, so let's take this one.
Project, my dear.
Did you or any of the other cast members ever believe that it would become this big?
I've lost weight. What are you talking about? Oh, the show would become that big. Sorry. Did I ever believe that it would become that big? No. I actually signed a 5-year contract because my agent said, "Oh, honey, it's sci-fi. The only sci-fi show that gets anywhere picked up is Star Trek." I said, "Okay, I'll do it for a year or two." I had no idea. It was great. It was a great 4-year run. It was wonderful. Great cast, great crew. Yes, ma'am. Oh, if anybody asks a special question and really wants a T-shirt, you can come up here and choose your size. I'll be the judge of the size.
No, I was just wondering how you like living in London.
How do I like living in London? Other than paying $8 for a Starbucks, it's a perfectly wonderful place. Yeah, £3.60. Do the math. Double it. Double everything. It's the second most expensive city in the world. But it's a wonderful place. It's just... it got to me. I'm a California girl. I grew up on the East Coast in Connecticut. But when it gets dark at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you either become a complete boozer or you just eat a lot. Or you just go to bed at 6. And either way, you're kind of... It's boring. It became sort of depressing, so the Science Museum actually set up a light box for people because they were becoming so depressed. So, because there's no light. It's dark at 3 p.m. during the winter, and it's pissing down rain, and it's gray and everything. I'm getting a lot of pop, pop, pop. Yeah. So essentially, you go into this box for 8 minutes and you get fed the vitamins that the sun naturally gives you. And I'm like, dude, I went to Laguna Beach High School. I need the sun, I need the surf, I need a surfboard, okay? So I came back in January and did a bunch of conventions to promote my books, and then I have a recurring role on Nip Tuck, so suddenly I went, you know, I'm kind of digging having a car in sunshine. This is nice. So I rented my place out in London to some friends, and now I'm staying in L.A. for now. Yeah, I missed it. I missed elements of, you know, Kmart. That was a big one, you know. I remember going to Ralph's when I came back, you know, the supermarket, and I filled up an entire shopping cart for $100, and I was like, oh, I love America! And I got to eat sushi. I mean, you might as well buy diamonds if you're going to eat sushi in London. Seriously, it's the same price. It's like $500 a person for 3 items. It's insane. It's insane. So first thing I did was I was like, take me to Tama, please. Ate sushi and shopped, and it was great. So it's amazing how much you take for granted, like having a car and things like that. You know, I didn't do well during the summer. I was rehearsing for the Edinburgh Festival, and I had to take 3 trains and 2 buses to get to rehearsal every day from my apartment that I have in Notting Hill to this piece of crap town outside of London. And it was August, and it was hot, and people really stunk, and it was bad. It was bad. It took me like 2 hours, and I was just going, this sucks. People do this every day? I'm not used to the metro system, so it's they break down all the time. They're like, you know, Queen Victoria baptized this one. Hello? It's like 9 million years old. It's archaic. Of course it stops, and you just sit there in the boiling hot with everyone with their armpits in your hand, in your face, and you're just like, okay. Hi, I'm Claudia. Nice to meet you. Now that you have your pit in my face. Seems a little intimate, doesn't it, on a 8 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday? Anyway, so, yeah, I love it. I mean, I love it, don't get me wrong, but I think you have to have both to even yourself out and stay somewhat sane. I use the word somewhat very liberally. Yes, sir. You're just going, hoo-ah.
No, I picture you going, I'm happening.
Pretty much, yeah. Yes, ma'am. Oh, God, I was relieved. Are you kidding me? I didn't even like regular makeup. I was known for the, get away from me when they come for the touch-ups. I was like, go away, I'm fine. I mean, I had a ponytail and chapstick on for 4 years. I was happy. You know, when they'd start, I'd go to my dressing room and I'd see the satin gown laying there and go, oh, man, that means I got to put curlers in the hair because the fans want to see my hair down. We actually got letters, you know, could you put her hair down more often? I'm like, dude. Yeah, of course you can have a shirt. These are mediums. Medium, right there. You're welcome. See, the first bold woman. She asked a question and she wants her shirt. Good for you. Yeah, no, I didn't envy them at all. Mira had chunks of her face coming off. Julie Caitlin Brown had, you know, skin problems from the makeup. They had to go in at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd waltz in at 7:30, and by 7:45, I was out of the makeup room going, oh, that was tough. I think I'll have a coffee, relax for a couple hours. Oh, yeah, do a little rehearsal. Great. Oh, the aliens are still there after 5 hours? Oh, sorry. No, it was, I felt very sorry for them. I especially felt sorry for them because we shot in the San Fernando Valley in an old Orange Bang factory.
Oh.
With no air conditioning, nothing. And you see these poor guys like Steve Austin, who's supposed to be here, by the way. Thank you, Steve! As a Pat Morrell, you know, with this big old rubber mask on. And a lot of times, you know, they would say cut, and you just see all these people pull up their masks like this, you know, pop them on their head and go... Bright red. You know, they'd give out little cups of ice water so we wouldn't lose any of the extras, you know, to like dehydration or death. I mean, these poor guys were wearing like 55 pounds of rubber on 108 degrees weather. I mean, it's insane. And you know, I was just glad to get out of that bloody wool suit. You know, the blue wool, which I like. Finally, you know, when they got the black uniforms, I was like, I could breathe, except for the snap. It wasn't very comfortable, any of it, but it was fun. Yes, ma'am.
What would you say your favorite thing of B5 was?
I think the camaraderie of the cast and crew was extraordinary. I've worked on a lot of, I mean, I've done like 500 jobs over the past 25 years, and I've never worked with a nicer cast and crew. They were just extraordinary. Everybody, we just laughed all the time. It was great. There was no, you know, there were. If anyone was difficult, we got rid of them. Oh, look who's being sucked out of the trap today. I have medium, extra large, or huge. Extra large is the only one left now.
That means it had my name on it.
There you go. Well, you're wearing a Claudia t-shirt, so you know. I'll sign your other boob, okay. You know. Thank you. There's a lot of things in life that a lot of you do, but I bet you don't sign people's boobs. I can guarantee you that you have never signed people's asses. And I have. And I actually got really ticked off at a guy in Scotland once because he made me sign his arm, and then he came back the next day and he had had it tattooed. I was like, why didn't you tell me, dude? I would have done it neater. I didn't know you were going to go tat it. He's got like all these names. I mean, and he's even got people who had like four lines on B5. Can you imagine him when he's 70? People are going to go, who the hell is Frank Edwards? It's this guy that was on the show that used to be on. There's no medium, just extra large left. Oh, it's a medium? Oh, lucky you. One shirt left. Extra large. I think she... Did you ask a question?
I'm going to ask a question now.
She called it. Sorry, she did have her hand up first.
How did you feel when Marcus was killed?
A great sigh of relief. No, when Marcus was killed, it was a well-written episode. So, I was enjoying the fact that, you know, I got a chance to act. That was fun. Instead of reading the news during the fourth season, the voice of the resistance. I got so lazy that I'd be like, bullshit, my part. Voice of the resistance, don't have to learn that. That's it. Okay, great. It was on a teleprompter, because they wanted it to look like I was reading it. Hello? Gee, that took a lot of preparation. Sit there at night. Don't have to learn that. Don't have to learn that. Honey, what are we having for dinner? Don't have to learn that. Guess what? I'm done. Yeah, that was not exactly the most challenging of seasons. Voice of the Resistance. Yeah, I felt like Dan Rather on speed. It wasn't very fun. So when, you know, when all the rest of the drama came, when I died, when Marcus died, when I, you know, that was actually... as macabre as it sounds, it was actually fun because I got to do something, you know. So it was nice. I felt sorry for Jason Carter. I told this story last night. I don't know, were any of you here last night? Yeah, okay, I've already told this story, so you two just shut your ears and talk about sex. But 9 episodes prior to Jason dying, he was bugging me because he was going on about America and how it sucks and everything. I was like, go back to Britain. It's right there. Here's a plane ticket, dude. Go. Get your $8 coffee. So, you know, he was just taking the piss, so I decided to take the piss as well. So I walked out of Joe's office with a brand new script, and I was like, and I run into Jason, and I go, oh, hey, Jason, sorry about, you know, well, you'll find out. And I was just making it up. He wasn't dead at this point. I didn't even know he was going to die. I mean, this was just me. Effing with him. So he goes, well, what? I said, well, Marcus dies. You didn't know? And I was like, he's like, what? What? What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? And I'm like, well, dude, I'm sorry, but, you know, a lot of people come and go here. Just the nature of the biz. You know, people get sucked out of air vacs all the time. Look at that asshole that used to work over here. Remember that guy, that little flyer? We hated him. Sucked him out. One episode. He was supposed to be recurring. Didn't work out. Prima donna. So, I kept my little secret. Jason freaked out. Some people played along with it. Finally, he found out it wasn't true. And then 9 episodes later, it was! Maybe I gave Joe the idea. I don't know. Maybe it was my fault Marcus died. Maybe Joe went, hey, Claudia, that's not only funny. That was a good gag, but hang on. Yeah, that works. Put a little drama in the 4th season. Yeah, okay, thanks, Claude. No, I mean, seriously, it was quite embarrassing, but funny. In a sick way. I like practical jokes. I do. I didn't like a lot of the practical jokes on Babylon 5 because they were always at my expense. When I had a serious dramatic crying scene, they would always do something stupid. I mentioned before the fishing rod with the Enterprise on it. When I was trying to cry over Kosh dying. That was good. There was a rubber snake, because I hate snakes. Always in my toilet, my dressing room, things like that. Yeah. Not fun. But it was fun being the only girl in a group of sort of boys. It was fun. I mean, the only girl human. The only commanding girl. It's just, you get it. Anyway, it was a Nevada of a sandwich, you know, Garibaldi. That's behind the scenes. You guys don't get those groupers. Yeah, me and Paris Hilton. Right. Yeah. I don't think so. Q-tip. Anyway. Who else? Yes, sir. Who was the best practical joker? Well, it's not like we went around putting itching powder down Jakar's mask. I mean, we had to have a modicum of seriousness, but we just kind of screwed around all the time. We argued a lot in fun. We played loud music in the human trailer, the makeup trailer. It was during the OJ trial, so of course that was always on. You know, I would say Jerry and Bruce and I were definitely the biggest distractions on the set. I would definitely take credit for a third of that noise that distracted the aliens trying to remember their long paragraphs of technobabble. Yeah, definitely. You had a question up here? Yes. Oh, it's about bloody time I get back to you, just because you didn't get the t-shirt. Yes.
I was wondering, since you live in L.A., how do you sort of insulate yourself from the L.A. hype?
How do I insulate myself from the L.A. hype?
How do you de-stress?
How do I de-stress? I don't really get stressed, because I'm just really happy. I'm learning the fiddle, because my brother plays bluegrass banjo. Do not laugh. So we're forming a family band? What are you laughing at?
Shoo-bop, shoo-bop.
It's going to be like the Partridge Family, okay? And I'm Susan Day, damn it. Stop taking fun of me. I learn different instruments or languages. I play pool a lot because that's sort of a zen thing. And I run and I swim a lot. And I read mostly. I'm a complete and utter book nerd. I read like a book a day. Just to give you an example, I brought 4 with me just for the 3 days I'm here. Because I knew I'd read 1 on the plane here and 1 on the plane back. I'm a very fast reader, so my last house, I had to have a 2-story library that actually had library, brass things for different sections and everything.
Nice.
And a ladder to go. I have so many books. And I keep giving them away. I'm like, I don't have any more room. But that's my one big expense is books. And that really makes me disappear from the whole world. I just get sucked into that. I've been doing that since I was a small child because I had 3 older brothers. And if you've ever been, harassed by simians, you'll know that you try to be as quiet and small as possible. So I just basically hid behind a book for the first, 16 years of my life. Yes?
What is your favorite book?
My favorite book?
Yeah.
Oh, good God, I wouldn't have a favorite. I mean,
Harry Potter.
What?
Harry Potter.
No. No, I'm reading Drop City by T. Corgason Boyle right now, which is really funny. It's about hippies. I love Ian Bank's Wasp Factory. I love Patrick Susskind's The Perfume. I love so many books. I've read so many good books lately, and I revisit things, and I'm reading everybody. I mean, I read history and biographies and everything. I've tried to get into genre, which is why I was reading John Varley and all these guys, and I'm writing a book with Selena Rosen, who's done a lot of, you know, I guess it's considered genre. But I'm just not used to the pace of it, so, but I'm getting it. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
I've heard Jerry Doyle say there were cases on Beat 5 where something a cast member would say opposite wound up in a character's lines or actions. Other than the case with crutches, is there anything you did that wound up in Ivanova's lines?
I didn't get that, I'm sorry. Did somebody hear it? You heard that... Can you come up here?
Sure.
Okay. You heard Jerry Doyle said that he has a small what?
Jerry said there are cases when something an actor would say off the set would wind up in a character's lines. And I know about your case with the crutches, but are there any other things you did or said offset that wound up with a bottle?
Oh, yes. Okay, I understand what you're saying. Yes, for instance, the one earring is because I used to wear one earring because my brother died. So Joe kind of filched that my brother was killed as well. Ivanova's brother was killed because my brother was killed. So that was, I think, one thing he filched from my personal life. And, of course, when I broke my foot... he had to write that in immediately. That's why I had a crutches and then a cane. And that's when I actually had a broken foot and a broken ankle when the Drazi guy had to fall right next to it. Now, if you've ever broken a bone or two or three like I did, and you know that you've got that sort of 10-foot perimeter.
Yes.
And you're like, don't come near me! Well, imagine a stuntman falling that close to a crushed foot. And even just the hit of the... You know, the floor, just that slight bounce, so I was like, oh! So that reaction that you see is real. Yeah, say no more. Yeah, that was very uncomfortable. I also threw my back out once, and that's why you see me during the League of Non-Aligned Nations. You see me sitting in the chair like this. It's not because I'm trying to look like Abraham Lincoln. It's because I can't move. They had to sit me in a chair for the whole scene and because I couldn't walk. So my back went out at 5 in the morning as I was prepping to go to work, and I couldn't drive, I couldn't walk, so I called my friend who also worked on the show, and I said, you got to pick me up, literally. I couldn't get off the floor, so it got me off the floor, you know, got clothes on me, drove me to the set, and I was just like, I couldn't move. So if I look a little stiff... Now you know why. You're like, oh, I just thought she was uptight. Oh, I was in agony. And of course, I couldn't take drugs because then I wouldn't remember my lines. So little things like that they wrote in. Jerry broke his arm, of course, so they had to write that in, or shoulder or whatever. Personality-wise, I think they incorporated a lot of our little innuendos. I mean, I think by season two, you could certainly see my sense of humor coming into Ivanova, as opposed to the first season where I was like, pull up my ass!
Yeah, true.
Like, dude. And then, of course, I made the huge mistake of saying, when that Jaboni came in first season as my ex-boyfriend, I'm like, oh yeah, right. Was she boffing her way through the universe? She's the youngest commander ever, but what, she had time to date? I don't want some exes showing up every second. I said, if you're going to get me a love interest, make it an alien or a woman. I was joking. I was thinking more like Picard as codpiece. I wasn't thinking of, you know. So then suddenly I read the like two scripts later. I'm like, oh, shit. This is like, I mean, literally, I feel like this. Oh, okay. My mom's dead. Dad's dead. Brother's dead. I'm a lesbian. Wait a minute. I want to see that Bible. That was not in the Bible. Yeah. So that was fun. Ironically, Andrea Thompson is now my mortgage broker. Swear to God. Scouts on her. She's my real estate agent/mortgage broker.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. She's a great gal. Very smart. Next question. Yes, sir.
There's this Lost Tales thing that's been released recently. Is there some kind of release schedule for additional...
How the hell would I know the release schedule of Lost Tales since I'm not in it? Hello?
I haven't seen it, so.
What?
I haven't seen it,
so. The only original cast members are Peter Woodard, Bruce Boxleitner, and Tracy Scoggins.
How dare
bitter party of one. I'm kidding, I'm not.
I'm not bitter, no.
The fans are, though. I can tell you that much. They're like, how come you're not in it? Well, I don't know. Maybe my phone wasn't working when they called. I have no idea what they are, when they're coming out. I've been living in England for 3 years. I have no clue. I didn't even know they were made until I came to and went to the last convention I went to. Yes. Somebody had a question over there?
I was just going to ask, were there any talks about you possibly being in a future one? But you kind of answered.
I don't think Joe's quite gotten over his bitterness yet of me not being in the fifth season. So I put on the uniform. Still fits. Oh, that's right. They cut it up and sold it on eBay in little chunks on trading cards. Guess they'd have to make new ones. People always say that to me. My friends say, so, like, when you go to these conventions, do you wear, like, your outfit? I'm like, dude, I barely got away with one of the earrings. Okay? They kept everything. You know those links that we had on the back of our hands? They would run. When they said, okay, martini shot, you know, we'd get the last shot. Okay, that's a wrap. They'd run. $6 million man, hurtling over tails, rip it off your hand. Because they cost $75 each. What am I going to do with a link? Well, now I think, well, I could sell it. Genuine link that I wore. I mean, I'm sure people pilfered stuff all the time, but no, they kept everything, and they're slowly selling it on eBay and stuff. Warner Brothers. Anybody else? Come on, kids. You got a little time here. Yes.
I can't hear a word you're saying.
Talking about your books.
Oh, my books. One of them is a sort of a... Oh, Selena Rosen, thank you very much, the publisher of My Life with Geeks and Freaks. Oh, you got here just in the nick of time. I'm pushing books. Because... And that's what love is all about, folks. Selena was actually standing at my table, having people in headlocks, saying, if you buy a book, I make money! I thought it was a little strong tactic. Slightly strong. My Life with Geeks and Freaks, which is published by Your Dog Press, Selena Rosen, thank you very much. Is basically a comic memoir of things that have happened to me during conventions, like being shot by a tribble, being stalked. Yeah. That was kind of a sad epitaph if that would have happened. You know, I mean, if it would actually have been a real bullet. Babylon 5 actress killed by tribble. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I had dreams. I thought I'd be old, you know, maybe clutching my 9,000 Oscars, lying in bed surrounded by my pool boy Juan, my chef Mario, and those are just two of the lovers. Maybe I'd die peacefully in my sleep. I didn't expect, you know, that epitaph. You can see it on E! Entertainment Tonight. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the sci-fi actress Claudia Christian has been shot by a tribble. More news later on. This story's like that, and various other humorous antidotes that have occurred to me. That's that book, and then the other two are smut. One is sort of straight girl smut, and the other is for boys set in Greece. Gay boys. It's gay smut. It's fun to write. It's historically accurate. Because I like to do research. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
difficult. When you're a straight woman. No, Yeah, that's. I've got two of those coming up. I have one with me, and then the how would you put that? The Greek gay boy one. So cliche. What? The Greek gay boy.
Yeah,
one.
That works.
The Greek gay boy one, the ancient history one. Ironically, I said it the same year that the film 300 did, and I actually started writing it before the film came out, so that was 350 AD. So, anyway, yeah, that's coming out very soon. It's a compilation of short stories written by various authors, and they're all kind of dirty.
The historical piece. Right? The historical piece.
The historical piece. Next! Subject, please! Somebody save me, I have no more t-shirts to give out, but please, yes. Elf woman.
How was the experience of the audition, and how were you picked, and how excited were you about it? For
Babylon. For Playboy? Babylon 5 audition was
very
easy.
That'd be cool too to hear about.
Playboy was funny. They're like, can you take your clothes off? And I'm like, standing in front of 10 people, I've never taken my kid off in front of anybody unless I was sleeping with them. And I'm like, what? Like, we just want to see if you got any scars or burns. I'm like, I am so not into S&M. Childhood scars and burns, Claudia. Oh, sorry. just a shark bite here. I auditioned at like noon, and they had me do some tough scene with Garibaldi, but not with Garibaldi because Garibaldi wasn't cast yet. And I read with the casting director, and they said, that was great. Can you come back at 3 and do the same thing? And I'm like, why? Do you have limited attention span or something? Why don't you just film it? Look at it more often. I don't know. So I said, sure, I'll be back at 3. And I went back at 3, and I did exactly the same thing that I did at noon. They said, thank you very much. And by 5 o'clock, they offered me the role. It was like that fast. Wow. So then I was sort of looking at the contract going, 5 years, wow. That's when my agent said, it'll never last. Because they have to remember, I was like, you know, in my 20s, and you'd think, you know, you got lots of choices in your 20s. Anyway, but it was great. It was a great run. I had heard rumors that Iman, David Bowie's wife, was actually going to play Ranava. And then I heard the rumor that the whole reason why they replaced Tamara Tomalitska-Bastabada was because she was too short. They needed somebody tall because the guys were so tall. Michael and Jerry were 6'2", and I'm 5'9", so they wanted somebody a little more formidable. And that's why they recast her. Not because of anything else. Yeah, so that came in handy, as opposed to when I was 9 and I had to dance with my science teacher. Because all the boys came up to here. Yeah, that was fun. Anybody else? I'm going to call it short if you don't ask me any questions. Yes, ma'am, back there.
Tell us about the process, like, you know, from the point where you get a script that you're getting ready to do the episode. You know, do they send it to the house? Do you get it the week before? You know, do you do run-throughs? Or, you know, tell us about that process.
They usually sent a mule out around Wednesday. It got to me by Sunday. Now, they delivered it to the house, and you get what's the white draft, which is the original draft. And you would get that usually maybe a week before you start shooting that episode, maybe less. Normally, you know, you read that and then it changes. You get yellow pages and pink pages and blue pages and purple pages, and they keep doing rewrites and rewrites and rewrites and rewrites. So by the time you shoot it, it's kind of silly to start memorizing the white script. You just get a general idea. Once they get the yellow pages, which is the next thing, then I started memorizing. The only time I ever was really upset, because Jerry and I had an ongoing battle between who did the most episodes, and he was, you know, he did them all plus the pilot, and I was in every single episode, and then suddenly there was an episode where I wasn't in it, and I freaked out. I was like, what the hell? I'm signed up for 22 out of 22. I went in Joe's office. I said, look, Jerry's going to beat me in the bet if you don't stick me in this goddamn episode. So that's why you have me coming out of the elevator with party favors all over my head in one episode, just going, don't even ask.
Thank you.
very serious thing, and Joe understood that. Especially if Jerry wins it. It would be my face every single day. So he wrote this little stupid scene where I just get on the elevator and go, don't even ask. And I was happy. I was like, okay, I'm in that episode. So I did 88 out of 88. I didn't want there to be a flaw in my record. You know, so that was funny. Where were we anyway? Oh yeah, so the whole process. So usually, get to work by 7, finish makeup by 7:30, have a little cup of tea, start rehearsing at 8, block the scene, they start lighting, we get our costumes on, touch up our makeup, come back, the scene is lit, we do one little rehearsal for camera, we start shooting, then we do coverage, unless it's a steady cam shot, which is just one time you have to get it right, because the guy's got the camera on his body and he's like this, following you everywhere, and if you screw it up, it's like, oh man, he's got to go back. Steady cam operator will not like you. Then you break for lunch at 1 o'clock, half an hour lunch, but that's a half an hour from when the first person gets their food to when the last person gets their food. Then after lunch, you go back and touch up your makeup again because you've eaten it off with your lunch, especially the aliens. That's a big touch up. Then you go back and you shoot until 7:30, home by 8:15, do some laundry, go to bed, start again the next day. That was the schedule. You work 12 and a half hours, 13 hours. Aliens would work 16, 15, 16. Oh. Yeah, but they made overtime. Hello? It's like more than I made in an episode. One day of overtime for aliens. Yes, sir.
Colin, you mentioned earlier that at the end of the wrap of the B5 that they were making sure they got a hold of everything and didn't let you walk away with anything. During the filming of the series, were you able to, hold on to any of the scripts, or were they just as rigid?
Oh, the scripts, yeah, they were delivered to your house. The scripts I've given away to people and stuff like that, and I have a bunch in storage somewhere because I stored all my stuff when I moved to England. But yeah, I've got a bucket of them. No, the scripts are yours. They don't take those away from you. You know.
You didn't bring any with you.
No, you know what? They're in storage. But what I should do is take a bunch of pictures of them and stick them on my website if anybody wants them, because I don't know what I have. But I'm pretty sure. I mean, I know I saved one of each of my dolls. Yeah. Yeah, I know I saved that. The 6-inch, the 9-inch where I'm cross-eyed. That's a good one. I like that one. And I like the one where they took the head from Dorothy of the Wizard of Oz and popped it on my body. Seriously. I swear to God, it looks exactly like the Dorothy doll if you look at it. I kept a little bit of some little stuff fans made me and stuff like that. I have it all in a box somewhere. When I'm old, I can say, that was Babylon 3. Great show. It was on, I think it was the Black Network. I don't know. BTTV. Anybody else? Yes.
How hard was it to react to the computer-generated stuff?
Oh, the green screen was hilarious. There was one actual, this is so funny. You know when the Kosh lands his ship and it's supposed to be like this tongue rolling out and Pat Tallman comes out, right? Well, they had her in a little wagon on her knees and they were pulling her and this grip is like eating a bagel like this. And he's pulling Pat in this little wagon. Trying to look all serious, and I'm supposed to be standing there greeting her, and I'm just like. And finally, she keeps cracking up. Finally, they're going, Claudia, just leave the set. It's ruining the shot, man. She can't keep a straight face. And I'm like, but she looks ridiculous. She's supposed to be all high and mighty. She's in a wagon with a grip pulling it. Like, look, so stupid. And I'm supposed to imagine. I said, well, what does the ship look like? I mean, I'm looking at nothing. I'm looking at a girl in a wagon. And they're going, there's a huge ship behind her. And it's got a giant tongue rolling out. She's coming down that, okay? I'm like, no, it's a wagon. With a girl on her knees. It is so not a ship. I'm sorry. I have a vivid imagination, but this sucks. So then the artist would come out and go, okay, here, Claudia, this is what it looks like. See, it's really magnificent. It's got all the, and it lives and breathes. It's like a living, breathing organism. I'm like, no, it's a cat in a wagon. So they made me leave the set. I got kicked off the set a couple of times. I couldn't keep a straight face. And I mean, you know, and also like, you know, in CNC, you have to understand that, that you know, we put things like, you know, on the button, it would say like beer, you know, or like songs, you know, like it was a, you know, jukebox, you know. Oh, yeah, I want to hear the, yeah, Steve Winwood, I remember him. You know, I mean, it was, we put stupid things all over the place. I mean, how are we supposed to remember where the Belosian freighter is docking at Dock H Blue 2? Oh, yeah, that button. Oh, yeah, the one that says potato chips. I mean, you know, Billy used to sit there on the White Star, I'm just playing. Doing something that looks like I'm doing something, you know. We do, I go, no, that doesn't look real, Billy. We, well, how would you know what's real? I'm sitting in a cardboard ship, for Christ's sake. I said, yeah, but this doesn't look like, I mean, what is that? He goes, I'm maneuvering the ship. Doesn't look like it to me. It looks like patting a wagon to me. You know, it was funny. I mean, you have to admit, I mean, the first season, you know, the walls, if I bump into them, I'd fall through it, you know. So, you know, you have to pretend that it's this thing, and, but you're literally standing on a cardboard box and people are walking by eating bagels going, yeah, that looks good, all right, let's shoot it. Feeling majestic. You know, so just imagine, Claudia, you're looking out in CNC, cautious ship is coming in. I'm going, no, there's a grip holding a fishing rod with a little model of the Enterprise on it, okay? That is not Kasha's ship. And there's no black, there's no stars, there's no planets. There's just a bunch of faces and camera going, yeah, looks good, let's shoot it. So it's not easy green screen, which is why Star Wars sucked. No. A couple scenes, you gotta admit, they weren't looking at the same thing. You gotta admit, Liam Neeson's going, and the other dude's going. Sorry, I mean, there's only so much green screen that you can pull off with looking real. Some people are very good at it. It's like animation. Ellen DeGeneres, Eddie Murphy, these people, I mean, Nemo, she did a great voice, but some people just can't, they can't inject life into something, you know, that's like that. You really have to be, you have to create this character. I mean, you've heard lame animation, you've heard great animation. You know, it just depends on the actor or the actress. You know, it's just it's hard. You don't know what you're going to look like. I mean, when I did Atlantis, they filmed me while I was doing the lines, but I had no idea. I saw a drawing of what she looked like, but I'd never worked with any of the other actors. I never met Michael J. Fox until the bloody premiere. Of course, I'd never worked with him. They have these thing called breakdowns that come out when parts are available for actors and actresses. And every time it was a Michael J. Fox film, it would say, do not submit actresses over the height of 5'3". I thought, well, that's kind of prejudice for us tall folks. No. So, you never work with anybody, and it takes years between the actual recording. So, like, for Demi Moore, when she was doing Drusilla or whatever she did, every time she'd come back, she'd have another kid with her. You know, it takes like a year. I did one session, and then 11 months later, they called me and went, okay, Atlantis needs you again. I'm like, Atlantis? Oh, yeah, that one. You go back in, and then it took like 3 years. That's how long it takes. You know, people change. They have kids. They shave their beard. You don't recognize anybody, you know. It's an interesting process. Long, long process. So you should appreciate those animated films. Yes? What am I working on next? I have a recurring role on Nip Tuck, so I'm just waiting for, we'll see when that next episode. The first one should air in October, I think around middle October. I play a character named Gwen, and I'm in the new season. I think I'm episode 4 or 5. It's on the FX channel. Play a real sicko. And I got to be naked. Yeah. Why didn't they call 20 years ago? Hate that. What is that? Why do all 40-year-old women have to take their kid off? You know? What's that about? Why didn't you call me when I was 18 and hot? Anyway, yeah, but I, you know, also all the men are naked too, so it's kind of fun. It's like Rome, except different. It's like Caligula. With a better paycheck than back in the 70s. That was a sick movie. There's a good Babylon 5 uniform back there. Very nice. Did you make it? No, he bought it. Sucker! I like the ones where people say, no, my mom sewed it for me. I like that. That's sweet. That's sweet. That's sweet. She just wants to get you the hell out of the house. She's on the sewing machine going, oh, this is going to buy me the whole weekend. This little shit's going to be at Dragon Con. I'm sewing this sucker. Yeah, honey, it's almost done.
How much preparation do you do for these conventions? Because, you know, you've got all those nerds that watch the reviews over and over again in episode 25.
Oh, how much? Oh, I don't know.
Do you do any preparation?
Preparation? Hell no. Before I wrote the Babylon 5 novel, I had never seen the series. So when people would say, in episode 4, when the Pokemon Master came in at 1600, and I would be like, you're presuming I read the script. Thanks, next question. I didn't watch it. I couldn't. It was on at, 7 o'clock at night, and it was interrupted in Los Angeles every week by the Lakers. So I never saw it. You know, and by the time it came out on DVD, I moved to England. I don't watch TV. I don't have a TV. So there was no way for me to see it. And then when I wrote the book, I had to watch a bunch of the episodes. And now I know why you like it. It's a pretty good show. You know, and when I read the script, it's bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. My part? Okay, Ivanova, great. I memorized that. Okay, you know, I mean, seriously, you're not supposed to know what everybody else is doing, right? That wouldn't be real, right? So preparation for conventions consists of me, you know, packing a couple decent outfits, making sure I have some makeup with me, and, you know, basically just having fun and hopefully bringing a couple things that I can give away, and that's about it. It's my big prep. So don't ask me anything specific, thank you. She was next, yes. Memorization is, it's just a part of your brain, because I can't remember, and you know, names, events, I can't remember 20 years of my life, I think. But I can memorize, and it's just a different part of your brain. That's for me, thanks. Tell them I'm busy, thank you. Sounded like an iPhone. Is it? I pick up the first line, and I put the paper down, and I repeat the first line. Then I pick up the second line, and I put the first and the second together. And then I put the paper down. And then I do the first and the second one, and I pick up the third one, and I just keep doing that. Just keep adding lines, and then it's just constant repetition, repetition, repetition. And the secret is, the second I finish a roll, it's gone. I mean, I think I remember 4 lines out of the 10 Shakespearean plays I've done. Oh, my good Lord, for what offense am I this fortnight been? That's it, Henry IV, part 1 and 2. That's the whole part. you know, I don't remember any of the plays, but if I looked at it, I would probably get it within a day. But you have to clean out the garbage, you know, so you basically do the role and it just goes through. But I remember things quite easily. If I audition for a role, I always memorize it. So I memorize during the audition, so if I get the role, I've already memorized that scene at least. But once it's done, it's gone. It's gone. People go, can you quote that speech you did when you were dying? I'm like, no. But you can, so you do it. Oh, there's something about who am I? I am the daughter of Susan. Well, yeah, that one, I know, but no, I don't know it. What do you think? I'd lay in bed every night going, who am I? I mean, I don't even remember saying Ivanova's God. I don't remember, you know, I remember the worst one was the pink bow speech when I was on CNC, because it was the end of the day. I had the flu, I was exhausted, we had worked a really long day, and it was hot, and my brain was just fried, and they were pushing. They've got 3 producers, one of them always had this watch that he hung on the thing, and he'd go like this. And I mean, talk about pressure. You know, I'm the last one, it's my close-up, the last shot of the evening, it's 7:35, we're now 5 minutes over time, and it's my giant pink bow speech, where I've got to go, oh, I was wrapped the station up, and I've got to move, and I'm doing things, and I just froze, and I burst into tears. It was the only time this ever happened in my life. I was so uptight, and so I couldn't get the lines out. And eventually, finally, you know, I was just like, you guys have to leave with the watches, because I'm getting really nervous. So, yeah, that, you know, when you have to move and do things and remember things like colors, names, numbers, Mr. White with the, you know, Blue Sector 2 and the tachy intermission and stuff that doesn't make sense to you, that you know, it's not real words, it's techno babble. It's like doctors on TV, you know, it's when you're doing the surgery and you have to list all this crap. It's not easy, but that's it's much easier just to memorize regular speech. Much easier. Yes, sir.
What will be a dream project for you, something that you would like to do in the future, either TV or movie?
Oh, I thought you meant win the lottery or something. That twat in Maryland won it. Damn it. I bought 2 tickets, too. I thought all of my dreams have come true. I've never played the lottery before, but I did. What would be my dream project? I would like to do more comedy, definitely. And I'd love to do another TV series. I really like I like working the long hours, and I like the familial feeling of having that crew as a family and that cast as a family. Just something, you know, that's well written and interesting character. That's all I ask for. Not another Eastern Bloc action film, please. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. Belgrade and Bucharest with lines like, yeah, well, that F-27 is going to be coming out here with a helicopter. CIA's after him. Yeah, why do I always get cast as FBI and CIA? What is that? I'm a goofball. I give the illusion of being a leader. Lead you right to hell. Anyway. anything just well written. But I would like the regular, you know, I've been doing a lot of films and stuff like that. I like doing television. I like going to work every day. It's fun. I like being in a studio, having your trailer there and your stuff all set up, being able to practice my fiddle and drive everyone crazy. That would be fun. Yeah, so that's you know, hopefully that'll happen soon. Yes. Yes, sir. Favorite episodes of B5, I did like the Drazi one because I got to be, you know, it was funny, and the actor playing the purple-green, that guy was hilarious. I think the one where Marcus dies and the scene that Biggs and I did together was very touching, and that was fun because I got to act. Those are probably some of my favorite ones, that whole chunk. Yes? Come on, you got 5 more minutes. Take it or leave it. Selena Rosen, yes.
Is it true that Selena Rosen was the greatest bartender ever lived?
Yes. I was funny. I was just going to bring that up. Did you guys know that Selena Rosen is the greatest writer living today? And she'll be dead by the end of today. So you better buy her books today because they'll be worth more by the end of the day. You're such a schmuck. She's like a 4-year-old trapped in a 90-year-old body. Yes, you with the beard.
So what are you doing for dinner?
Well, that's an offer I can't refuse. I actually, I don't know. What did you have in mind, baby?
I've heard of your B5s. The B5 CD you appear on. What are some of the other CDs?
I have 5 CDs out. One was an experimental Scottish musical called Area 51. It was the first sci-fi musical that I recorded in Scotland with a bunch of professional singers. I was the only one that really couldn't sing, and they didn't like me. But they all ended up on the West End in fabulous shows. I thought the script was really fun, and the part was great, so then this guy knew that by bringing somebody that was known in the sci-fi world, it might help. That musical was never made, but the album was. And then I did my first single, Taboo, which had only 2 songs on it. That was the first one. Then I did an album with another girl named Claudia, who we ended up getting in a sort of disagreement. So we didn't work together again, but I just basically took her album and added a bunch of junk of my voice to it, and then we came out with the Claudias or whatever, Claudia Squared or something like that. But that was her material. Then I did the B5, Trying to Forget, with the rest of the cast members of the Babylon 5, and that was fun. And then I did my latest album with 3 songs written by Bill Mumy and 3 songs written by a band called Bubble that won the John Lennon Writing Award. That song is actually on my album. And the girl from Bubble used to be the bass player for Vixen, and the guy was the lead singer of Dogs D'Amour. I don't know if you guys know those bands. Vixen was that girl hair band. Anyway, then the other 3 songs, a couple I wrote, and another group wrote. And that's a very eclectic mix of music. So that's five, I think. Boy, that was exhausting.
Who's next? Last question. One more. Yes, sir.
What other instruments do you play?
Which reminds you of the old joke, what's better than roses on a piano? Two lips on an organ. If you say the skin flute, I'm going to bloody get over there and pummel you. No, I play everything really badly, but I play a lot of stuff. I noodled around with the saxophone. I taught myself the piano. I tried to teach myself guitar. Now I'm trying to teach myself the fiddle. I played violin as a kid. I mean, I'm one of these people that it's like I speak enough Italian to get along into Italy, but once we get to an esoteric conversation or something deep, I'm like, same thing in French, same thing in Spanish, and I live in Southern California. It's ridiculous. I speak housekeeper Spanish, and everyone thinks, oh, you've got such a great accent. Yeah, but I know 100 words, and that's it. I can, tell her to clean the toilet better. It's embarrassing because I have a facility for it. I've got a great ear for music and languages, but I'm just not disciplined enough to stick to one. I flutter around like a butterfly. Take a little taste of this, a little taste of that, and I should just nose down. When I'm old, I'll have time to learn something really well, I figure. By like 65, 70, I'll be able to. Now I can take piano lessons because nobody wants me anymore. Because I have no children, no husband. Thank God. I think that was it. We're, according to my watch, it's 12:30. You want a picture? Cool. Yeah, right. You want to come up here and have someone take it? Okay. I'll come down there. All right. Photo op? Thank you, Steve Austin, for helping me with this talk. Yeah. Don't drink too much tonight, okay?
And we're back. That was a great panel, and the room was actually quite full. Unfortunately, I never wound up getting a shirt, but I think in this recording I got something far, far better. After the panel, I ran into her on the stairwell, and she gave me permission to send this file into the Babylon podcast. So, I'd like to shout out a very special thank you to Claudia Christian for allowing me to share this hour with all of you. Thanks for listening, and I hope you liked it.